Councilmember Eugene Connors?
Here.
Councilmember Joan Hanson?
Here.
Councilmember Shirley Dowdy?
Present.
Mayor Ron?
Here.
Burpley?
Burpley. Councilmember Douglas Dunn?
Here.
Councilmember Serena Sullivan excused. Justin Johnson, City Manager. Nina Williams, Deputy City Clerk. Sharon Bono, Finance Director. Cindy Moss, Personnel Director. Jack Ernest, Fire Chief. Tom Climate, Public Works Director. Robert Coronado, Sergeant at Arms. And Carl, City Attorney.
Thank you. Item number one, discussion of projected fiscal year 2015-16 expenses and revenue. Prioritize suggestions for provisions of services in fiscal year 2015-16. Let me refer to the City Manager, Mr. Justin Johnson.
Thank you, Mayor. Before we get started, certainly want to turn it over to Mr. Heratic, who wants to chime in and share some information.
Last year, Mayor and Council approved some capital improvement projects in the city, and although we've run short on money and haven't been able to do a lot of them, I did want to show you one of our successes. We are going to be redoing the windows at the post office and the library building in Old Bisbee. And one of the capital projects I asked for was I asked for money to redo the windows and the screens. Well, I'm only going to be able to do the screens on the bottom on the post office, and I am going to be able to redo the screens at the fire station uptown, as well as paint, and most of the plaster, the outside repair work is done. But what I wanted to show you is that we moved Public Works to City Hall, we put our wood shop downstairs, much to the chagrin of our finance director, who has to listen to all the record, but she's been a bit sport about it. What we did is we went to the library, and we pulled off the original screens. We had a discussion with SHPO, State Historic Preservation Office, and we asked them what their thinking was on those windows and screens, and they want everything to be as close. They want things to either be. I was told by Shibble that Bisbee is so historic; it's the most historically intact city in the state of Arizona. That there's nothing we can do repair-wise to change what we have because we have so much of it. But if you're going to repair it, it has to be exactly like the old item, if you can do it. If you can't make it exactly right, do something modern. So what we did is we have a couple of inmates who are very good with wood, and we have a wood shop that we moved over from the old buildings to this building. So I want to show you the screens that we're going to be putting in that you allowed us for that, because you approved those capital improvement projects, that we have reproduced for the library. This is accurate to a millimeter. But all the molding, the type of screening we're using, all the frames, everything is made. This started as a 1x12. And it is milled down. There is nothing left at the end but bags of sawdust. We are using the entire 1x12. Because we couldn't find any lumber, any of the sizes. So that we had milled it down and cut it down, and we were able to historically reproduce. We even found the hinges online.
Exactly.
I just want you to see that it's done. We cleaned up the two old screens. It was copper screening. We found copper screening. So I want to thank you for allowing me to do it. But I did want to show you the windows haven't been done yet. It's all coming. It'll be done in another month or two. But I'm just really happy that we were allowed to actually take one of our old buildings and between the fire station and the post office, we're actually able to recreate it the way it originally was, including the color, which was on record at B&D Hardware. It was on a paper record, on a hard file. It was a color that they made through Phelps Dodge. It's called Shutter Green. It was a color that was developed in Florida, and so we even had the original color. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank you for giving us the opportunity to actually improve on the building in Bisbee.
Thank you.
Sandy,
we're very cost-effective, too.
Before we get started, we have one person that would like to make a few comments. That's Mr. Fred Miller.
Hi, my name is Fred Miller. I live at 39 Hazard Street. And given that this is kind of a wish list, I thought I'd put listening. Apropos the revenue discussion tonight, I was just going over the March statistics for my inn, Copper City Inn. And March was the first month that the new 3.5% tax rates went into effect, I had a really good month. I had 74% occupancy, which is nice. I contributed $547 to the city through sales and bed tax. That's $156 more than I would have contributed if the rates were 2.5%. So I really want this to continue. I'd love to have months like this throughout the year. But I supported both tax hikes because they were narrowly targeted, so I don't mind paying the increased taxes. But I want to see that the city budget reflects what the city, that what the voters approved. And many of us have priorities about how the city should spend our money. And these are mine, I guess. In tourism, you know, the advertising line item in the visitors center budget last year, last couple of years, has been $50,000. That has been matched by the city. I mean, that has been used with Arizona Office of Tourism matching grants. 2 years ago, it was $42,000. Last year, it was, I think, $36,000. If it's offered again this year, and I've got to call in to AOT to find out if it is, I'm hoping that the bulk of the $50,000 that should be in the advertising budget will do a match on that grant so that we can leverage that money up to somewhere around $90,000 in advertising. and according to the voters, that advertising and many of the business owners should be targeted to Phoenix and Tucson and really not to some of the other places that have been advertised in the past, such as in Canada and Texas and such. And the revenue from the bed tax is that when we were having discussions about raising the tax, it was talked about that the bed tax revenue raise would go toward a branding program as well as a complete redo of the discoverbisbee.com website. And I'm sure that will stay in line, that $50,000 plus whatever the revenue projections for the increase in the bed tax will stay the same as it was last year and not be the advertising budget not be diminished because there's going to be additional money coming in from the bed tax. I hope that the budget for Public Works would reflect the streets and infrastructure improvement plan as mandated by the voters when they passed the sales tax increase. As it was this last year in the community development budget, there was $10,000 to support economic development. Some of that money was used to partner with Cochise Hospital to do a study, a secondary study, about the feasibility of an aging-in-place thing. And as a member of the IBISBE committee, we supported that, and I'm glad it was done because we've got some interest in building something like that. I can report that with IBISBE, we've had some recent meetings that were pretty productive. We went to U of A Tech Park. We met with somebody from the Arizona Community Foundation. Some of us did. And these kind of meetings can possibly yield important economic developments for the city. And I'm just really hoping that there can be a sum of money that's available under control of the council that we can come to the council, if necessary, and ask you to use some or all of that money for whatever purpose. It may be a survey. I don't know what it's going to be for. But to have that there. It's not necessarily going to be spent, but I hope you will put it back in the budget this year. The public safety personnel retirement system, there's talking about reforms. I didn't see anything that went through in this last legislature session that addressed this at all. I didn't even see proposed legislation. So I would hope to see a discussion of what's being done about the pension costs. PSPRS has an unfunded liability of more than $6 billion now. It's something like 47% of what they should have. And so the discussion, I think, around that is BISBE participating in any kind of reform efforts? And if so, what are they? And because I think the public safety pension is going to be close to, I think, $900,000 this year, something like that, which is almost a sixth of the budget. And then for in public safety, the fire department, one piece of legislation from the recent session, it reduces ambulance payments. I'm not sure how that's going to impact us, but I think it will impact revenue projections from the department, so we'll have a little bit less money coming in. I don't know how much less. More than one quarter of the city budget goes to the fire department. It's imperative to see if there can be any operational cost containment and savings in the department, and I hope you consider hiring an independent consultant to do that and putting money into the budget to do that. Some of us in the business community have long advocated an independent consultant to review all operations at the fire department. And the goal would be to make recommendations to control costs and improve operations. And some have interpreted wrongly that this is a criticism of the fire department. It's not. It's a realization that fresh, unbiased analysis often can improve operations of any department. And businesses do this frequently. There's no reason for the government not to do kind of have similar looks at their operations of any department. And the library, finally, I hope that money could be found to open the library on Saturdays. I have guests that want to see the historic library, and they're not able to. So, thank you.
Thank you. Before Mr. Johnson starts up, I think it would be important to explain for the public just a little bit, if we can, sometime during this conversation this evening, of how the budget process works. For example, each department comes in. I know that before I was in municipal government, I would look at the budget like 100 pages, and I would be, oh my gosh, it's too much. But it's not really, just break it down. So maybe at some point in time tonight, we could explain how that process works to a certain degree and how it is broken down, enterprise funds, general fund, et cetera. So probably I might learn something on that. I'll turn it over to Mr. Johnson.
All right, good deal. Thank you, Mayor. One of the things I wanted to do very quickly is just kind of give you all an overview of where we are effective March 31st of this year with our finances. And so you actually have this sheet here. So just to walk you all down, as of right now, total revenues are about 64% of budget. We're about 64.2%, with 75% of the year last. And so on the collection side, one of the areas where we've seen the most substantial decrease in revenue is taxes, specifically on the city sales tax side. That's one area of concern for all of us. And Sharon and I, we sat down and talked about perhaps opportunities with the Department of Revenue, perhaps coming in and taking a look and doing an analysis on is there a program that they offer that will help curb the inability for us to, it seems like, maybe collect as much in city sales. But we're not know what's really going on out there until we're able to do that analysis. And so in year to date, we collected about $2,596,000. Last year, at this point in the year, we collected about $2.75 million. And so we've got roughly about an 8% reduction in the amount that we collected last year. The other area where we've seen a decrease is charges for services. At this point, we're about 59.8% of where we were projected to be compared to budget. Last year, we collected about $845,851, and this year, we've only collected about $761,635, which is a difference of about 5.4%. Now, the area on contributions and transfers, on a positive note, we're up about 2.1% this year to last. Last year, we collected $211,288, and this year, we're at $233,860, so a slight increase, about 2.1%, but overall, we're, like I said, we're about 64.2% of where we were compared to last year. Now, on the expenditure side, we certainly, if you look down at the total expenditures, we're about 71.0% on where we are. So we're right on target. The last month, the areas where we saw a pretty substantial, for lack of a better term, increase is in the area of community development, an increase of about 32.8%. Last year, in that particular department, the expenditure was $49,331, and this year we're about $94,911, primarily because of the addition of that the extra animal shelter coordinator. Looking at that operation, I thought it was a responsible thing to do, given the amount of time needed to oversee that function. Fortunately, we were able to have Kathy Flood in place, contractors, so we were able to lock in that cost that we're spending in that particular area. And also, as I stated last time, in legal services, we're up about 33.5%. This time last year, $33,285, and this year at $50,285. And we saw an uptick in city magistrate. Last year, we were at 26,373. and this year we're up about 18.1% to about $35,060. So, but overall on the expenditure side, we're right on target. But one of our biggest areas of concern, obviously, is city sales tax. So,
let me ask one quick question. Is just the city sales tax, or is that the property tax as well?
It's city sales tax, bed tax, state sales tax, vehicle tax, and property taxes. And that's broken out. You'll have that in your
So part of that is state share of revenue taxes.
Well, state share of revenue is in the intergovernmal line item here under urban revenue sharing, and we'll actually touch on that this evening. So. All right, so that's that. And one of the things I wanted to point out just for, unfortunately, so many of you here tonight, you all received this document, state share of revenues, and just to highlight, for BSBY, in the category from a state share revenue standpoint, vehicle license taxes, we're projected to receive about $267,760. HERF revenues, $390,482. Sales tax, $532,597. And on the income tax side, about $671,229. And so we did see a slight decrease overall, but nothing overly significant. Actually, let me pull that last year's out for you. 2014, so as an example, in vehicle license taxes, last year, this year we're at $267,760. Last year, we're at $271,935,000. In HERF categories, this year we're at $390,482. This year we're at last year we were at $393,027. In sales tax, this year we're projecting $532,597. Last year we were slated to receive $503,748. And lastly, this year we're looking at about $671,229. And this year, last year in 2014, we received $674,849. So as you can see, kind of sort of across the board, we saw some decreases in our state share of revenue numbers. So did you all have any questions?
A question on the sales tax. I know it can only be speculation. Why do we think it is down? Is there any ideas or thoughts? I know it's just speculation, but what do you think?
Definitely, the city sales tax is, we did not anticipate the closing of ALCO, and that has a pretty substantial impact on our community. Also, one of the things that Mr. Heretic had brought to my attention was that Freeport had completed their soil remediation program a couple months earlier than what we had anticipated. Last year, on the taxes, it was a boom year. I mean, it was great. So when Mr. McKinnon and I looked at that, we took into account that program was going to end in December. But I think it ended a lot earlier. It was October. So those are the two big ones that I can see that directly hit. So
the significance of that is the number, and how many employees do they have?
I think they let go 350 employees.
Okay. So when you take into account the number of employees that are here in this community spending money in restaurant stores, grocery stores, whatever the case may be, that's a pretty substantial impact. Obviously, like Sharon said, the closing of ALCO is in effect. Now, granted, ALCO officially closed, I believe,
in January, February.
And so, we really won't see that hit until a couple of months. We truly see that hit a couple moments. So that's what we've got. Unfortunately, bed tax is up this past month. We had pretty substantially needed.
We were pleased to see that. So in May, we're going to actually start seeing the actual impact, because in March is when the sales tax increase went into effect, and then they have till the end of April to file their tax forms with the state, and the state will start dispersing in May. So I don't have a whole lot of information to give you right now on the impact of that, but we will come back with that information.
And so, Mary, you know, this meeting is, quite frankly, an opportunity for us to listen, hopefully it's, you know, some of a free-flowing session to get ideas, thoughts from you all. I know last year you went through a similar process, and so we wanted to continue that and give your thoughts, input, any feedback. I had a meeting with the staff this morning, and they threw out a couple of ideas for consideration, but I did want to give you all an opportunity to discuss. I know Councilmember Sullivan can be here tonight, and so she sent out her thoughts as it relates to the budget. And if it's okay with you, Mayor, I'd like to just kind of start there. We can go. I know Councilmember Dunn, he has some items as well.
Of course.
Okay. And I'll just kind of read. I don't want to miss anything what she's suggesting. So one of the things that came up during our strategic planning session was a consideration of us going with a software solution called Mind Mixer, a two-way communication tool to allow for some back and forth conversation from the city to the public to get thoughts, feedback, input on initiatives, projects, anything along those lines. And the cost associated with that is about $25,000 to $3,000. So the second item that she has, a lot more money for community development and specifically grant writing and administration. Number three, eliminate interfacility transfers in order to save on wear and tear on our ambulances and reduce overtime hours. If Arizona Ambulance took over all IFCs, it would cost the city of Bisbee nothing. Ambulances would need less maintenance, and the city could rack up less overtime hours and pension rates. Number four, reduce the budget for public safety, possibly by means of reducing overtime hours and any other avenues the departments might find. I suggest the departments explore the possibility of using reserve officers and or volunteers. Number five, refrain from all new hires in public safety and find innovative ways to meet current priorities based on the department's mission statements. Number six, every city department should review procedures and tasks based on mission statements and review overtime in terms of hours, cost, and benefit cost. Number seven, analyze all City of Bisbee salaries comparatively to other cities of our size, as well as cost of living, with special consideration given to education, years of experience in their field, and years served with Bisbee. And she has a link to payscale.com as a source for research. Number eight, defer any change up or down in salaries until a cost of living comparison and like city comparison is completed. And her last item is consider reduction of salaries that exceed comparative study results. Mm-hmm. And with that said, if there are any thoughts?
I would like to talk a little bit about the interfacility transports. It's my understanding, and maybe Chief Ernest can tell me about it. We charge about $2,600. Mm-hmm. Come on up. My understanding that this city probably, you know, on the business side of it, I know there's a personal side of it, people seriously deal with going on, but the city probably profits about $1,000.
A drug of Tucson transport.
Okay. So it's actually a revenue generator for the city. So therefore, I would strongly encourage that we support buying a new fire, new ambulance. Real soon, like in May, and I support that. I think it is very important, not only for the safety of the person being transported, but the employees that have to get into those vehicles every day. And we did have we talked about it a few weeks ago, where one of the fires, one of the ambulances has about 300,000 miles, or 310, one has 280, one has 270. We need a new ambulance. And so that's important to me, and maybe some of the other council members. It's very important to me that we make that acquisition.
And you know, Chief and I, we talked a little bit this morning, and certainly through this process and any feedback that we get tonight, we'll look at, you know, all of our operations and the other areas that we can streamline, look to do some things a little bit differently, look at our acquisitions and see, you know, taking a more, using our business acumen side to try to, you know, assess all of our operations within all of our departments. And since we have a separate fire, that's something that we did have a very, very clear discussion about today. And our chief and I will jump in and learn.
Well, in regard to all of that, what I would like to see from each of the departments is what is the bare bones that you need as in terms of dollars, so that we can see what is left over in the general fund, and then we can start looking at what are the priorities. And I think that that's where an ambulance would be put in, and that's, you know, and the other, the interfacility transfers. We can start looking at that and start plugging in what level of service we want to see with this be, and see what it comes out to. Mm-hmm. It gives you a baseline.
Thank you, Mayor. Also, given the increase in the amounts that we have to pay to pensions, I don't want it to be like punitive or anything like that, but certainly an exercise of whatever that additional amount is going to be comes out of whatever the proposed budget is, and just so as an exercise, you know, because it's going to come from somewhere, and I think that if everybody else, if all the other department heads have to do the exercise of surgery in finding the money to pay these pensions, I think certainly public safety should not be immune from doing all of it, even though it's just, you know, and I'm not saying that that actually has to happen or would happen, but just so that they know, not that they don't know, but going through this exercise will put a face, you know, because the department heads are sitting right here, we're doing this all together, and I think that that's just that's a reality that public safety needs to look into the face of the other department heads and saying, hey, man, you know, we have to pay this money, and it's got to come from somewhere, but we're not. And I don't know where the budgets are, if they're greater than they were last year or not, but we're not moving on our budget, and we need everything that we've always had. I mean, there needs to be more. You talked about working in silos and just to demolish those things, and we all sit at the same table, and there are departments that you're in charge of, but this is one city. This is one budget, and everybody needs to share with the same magnanimity that we all do, you know, at the same level. And that's my hope going forward, that people acknowledge the cuts that people have taken for a long, everybody's taken cuts. However, there are some things that just seem to be so we're just compelled. There is no wiggle room. There is no discussion. You just turn around, and by the way, you're going to pay this much more this year. It's tough. It's a tough reality. But I think that the more that you feel what other departments feel, I think the better off everybody's going to be at this table and this town as a whole. Thanks.
Councilor Number Dunn, would you like to talk about your issues?
I'd just like to make an announcement. I think you read in the paper that the Board of Mayors group is meeting in Sierra Vista tomorrow, and certainly I participate in a number of those meetings as mayors from Sonora as well as Cochise County. Councilperson Sullivan and I attended the last one, which was in Agua Prieta. This is very, very convenient. I think that our relationship with Mexico is very important in terms of our economy. Certainly the trade, I think like 20% of Safeway's trade is across the border. You just look at the license plates in the parking lot and you can tell that. This is certainly it's indicated in the paper, the meeting at the meeting facility at the police department, which is right at the city complex, and the public is invited. I noticed one of the presenters is going to be the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. I had the opportunity to tour Naco, Sonora, Monday, I believe it was, with Alexandra Oneo, who is the representative of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, is actually housed, officed in Douglas. And I think there's, again, some opportunity and since this is not, and it's set up, Cochise College has this like the UN. I mean, you have headphones and there's interpretation, and so it's really a very interesting exercise and opportunity to meet the mayors from Sonora as well as here. So I think I encourage all of you to consider going tomorrow.
Well, I will, I've already made arrangements to be there tomorrow. In the future, we'd run into maybe a possible quorum of a lot of council members and when. So
that's a good point.
If one or two would like to come, they certainly welcome. I'll be leaving at about 7:30 in the morning is when I'll be leaving. So if anybody wants to come along, they're certainly welcome. Thank you, Councilmember Dunn.
Good. Well, certainly, I prepared a list of talking points here to share with you that I hope everybody has a copy of. Certainly, I really appreciated, we initiated this last year, and I thought this opportunity to put things on the table at this point, at the start of the budget process, was very, very useful. And a number of things came out of that, including the passing of our two tax increases that came out of that initial session. I have a number of ideas here. The first is I really would like to see us budget. And this somewhat ties in with Serena's suggestion in terms of how can we get more citizen involvement, do a budget analysis packet and survey, something we budget for to do in the coming year, not for this budget year, but it will allow citizens to really look at the cost of doing business and be more involved in terms of deciding, helping them decide the level of city services that they want provided or are willing to pay for. Because it's hard decisions. Our current governor campaigned on the platform of shrink government. And he was elected with a vast majority. Certainly, that political persuasion is probably offset, Doug Ducey's with Doug Dunn's, who's kind of his tax and spend liberal. And somewhere in between is where we're at in terms of deciding what type of a city are we here in Bisbee and where do we want to place our resources. And I would like to see us make a commitment. I think when Justin first came in, he made reference to something of this sort, and I would like to pursue that in terms of really allowing citizens to see what it costs to do different services and help them in that process of deciding what do we want. Certainly, an alternative would be to move forward with a special election to raise the tax rate. I mean, that's a way of allowing the citizens to have a full vote in terms of our needs, and I wouldn't advocate that myself, but certainly that is an alternative. I think we need to continue to reinvest in our community for it to prosper, and that's true for, as a Main Street merchant that I am, if I don't continue to reinvest in my business, then it doesn't prosper. And frankly, we're kind of in an anti-tax mode in the public today. Frankly, what gives me the most satisfaction in life is, frankly, how my tax dollars are now being spent. The services that I'm getting with this community, that we've got an excellent ambulance service, we've got a unique police department here. I mean, this is a unique community to police, I want to tell you. I mean, it's almost a double standard in terms of, on one hand, we want to buy the books, but not with me, buy the books. The police department is needs to be commended over and over again in terms of working that line. Certainly what we've done with recycling, the parks department, the library, et cetera, I get great satisfaction and enjoyment out of how my tax monies are spent. But not everybody agrees with me, and at some point they need to be involved in that process. Again, item two, then going on down, we have talked in the past, but never made a decision in terms of the possible use of revenue bonds, in which we would float a revenue bond and pay it off with sales tax, the sales tax increase for street improvement, so that improvement could be made early in the project rather than late in the project. There is, however, a cost to doing that, In talking with Stanley Stern, he says we're looking at $35,000 to $50,000 just on the bonding expenses. In addition to that, you would have obviously the interest payments of paying off that revenue bond. That is something we have not yet. It's come up repeatedly. We've never yet made a decision on in terms of is that something we need to budget for.
Doug, and I think actually I think maybe Justin said it. And it's if you're doing a bond, it gets paid off generationally, and it's not just a clump. It's not just the people sitting, you know, living here right now. And you know, I mean, that bond is it's over the years, and you know,
intergenerational equity.
Intergenerational equity.
Yeah, so spread it out over you know, over a set period of time, and the folks, not just that are here now, get responsibilities on all of our backs here for the next 5, 10, whatever years, but spread it over the period of time is a thought process behind it.
Well, that's true with the sales tax.
Going with the bond, right?
But sales tax is coming in annually, so year by year. So the same, that's, you know, it's paid off by the sales tax. So
yeah, but that's
no additional, huh?
But in 5 years, that goes away.
No, eight years.
8 years, excuse me.
But anyway, I'm just raising the point that there is a cost to doing that, and we have not yet discussed that and not yet discussed the pros and cons of doing
Let
that.
Let me go to Council Member Klein.
You have brought up, you know, bond and brought it up, you know, many times. Now, are you thinking like near future, or are you thinking a couple years down the road?
Well, if this we're starting to collect sales tax now, so we certainly could do a revenue bond now for the, you know, we would borrow against what would be expected in terms of sales tax collection, the 1% over 8 years. That's where the revenue would come from would be the sales tax revenue.
Well, you know, I don't know. I'm concerned about. We were lucky and we got, you know, the bed tax and the sales tax passed, and I think everybody was pleased to do that. I'm concerned if we kind of try to throw out a bond now. You know, I don't know.
Well, there's no additional tax. There's no. Well, I agree with
but
you.
But people don't understand mm-hmm. bonds. They just. Don't they just see it as another tax? They don't. I don't know. I'm just.
It's not another tax.
I'm not saying it wouldn't work. I'm just saying I don't know if it's too soon if we do it like right away.
Well, I tend to agree with you, but I know people have also expressed to me we like to do the street improvement up front rather than doing it on an annual basis, spread out over 8 years, and that's the only thing we're talking about. It's no more taxes. It's just that do we borrow and able to do it all up front? Or do we spread it out, doing projects every year over 8 years?
You know, one of the things just in past experiences, and I apologize for saying this, but in the former county where I work, we have a special purpose local option sales tax. And so one of the things that a very, very conservative community in Georgia, but consistently passed the SPLOS, but a portion of it was broken out by projects, and we had these various project lists, you know, police stations, road improvements, roundabouts, things of that nature. And so what county leaders decided to do was kind of split it up. And so if you identify some of those higher priority projects, and so that portion of that percentage of projects, we bond finance, and the other we call, you see on my whiteboard upstairs, PAYGO, you know, kind of pay as you go. So if you had, depending on the amount of sales tax money that's collected, you use a portion of that to pay off the bond, and the other portion, again, pay as you go as it comes, smaller projects and sidewalk improvement or something along those lines is another way to kind of think about it. And I'm just throwing that out as an idea and option. But to have a pretty conservative state like Georgia to consistently pass it, the key component is, you know, the citizens saw what they were getting. And so every 6 years, every 7 years, whenever that SPLOS came up for a vote, it was renewed because there was confidence in the community and saying, hey, look, I see what you guys are doing in my community, and I see the results of the decisions that we make as taxpayers and the leaders in our community. We see the fruits of our labor. So you know what? We'll support you after that eight-year period. It comes up again for renewal. Okay, thumbs up. Let's go ahead and run with it. Let's do it. And so, but just a thought.
Let me interject one thing on that. I mean, I appreciate what Councilmember Dunn is saying. I mean, generally, I like to get things done. However, it's backed by the sales tax. And we saw, we are seeing or witnessing a somewhat of a reduction in the sales tax this year. So I wouldn't want to get in trouble with a bond and the sales tax is not going to cover it. That would be a serious problem.
Personally, I agree totally with you. I'm just repeating what has been said on the street. I mean, that's how I would vote is exactly the view. But there are others who have said, let's do it up front. And certainly people have certainly, and it's all we're doing is just borrowing against the revenue that is anticipated in. And certainly, you know, a bonding firm can come down. I think at one point, the Streets and Infrastructure Committee actually had a bond person down and made a presentation to us on this. And that could be done again in terms of understanding what's here. But anyway, we can bait that later, but it is something that we need to either put in or not put in the budget and at some point make a decision on.
Okay, let me just clarify then. So it would be borrowing against potential revenue, sales tax revenue. So that's a tricky situation.
It's actually projected. It's not potential. It's a real number, but it's a projected number.
No bond firm is going to loan us more money than they know they can collect. So I don't think we have to worry too much about that. They won't give us the full amount of the projected. It will be the portion that they are assured of collecting. But again, the whole question is, do we want to do it up front or do it project by project over 8 years?
Ms. Bono, would you want to have a comment on that? You're the finance director.
Right, well, you know, I'm looking, and not only can you look at the revenue bonds, but you can also look at the street improvement bonds. And those bonds can be paid back with HERF dollars. And we have limited HERF dollars per se, but that would be something that we could consider if, in fact, what you're worried about wouldn't happen. Saying that, what if we didn't collect enough? How would we pay for that? We could use the HERF if we do it through street improvement bonds. I think as we go through this evening and Mr. Johnson tells you of our other needs, that bonds need to be considered, and then we can go from there. But there's no harm in looking at it.
Yeah. Let me just make one comment on the highway user revenue funds. I was talking to somebody before the meeting, and apparently that may be on the governor's desk in the future years to dramatically reduce them. And so, once again, it is a potential revenue, and it may be substantially reduced.
Think I like that idea better, though, as far as street improvement, you know, just doing a street improvement bond. That might be a little bit easier to get through.
Right. And, you know, there's another bond called the general obligation bond, too. So, you know, we could explore that. We could have somebody put something together, Mr. Reeder, and talk to us about it, you know, through this process. If not for this year, then for next year. I also have some concerns about waiting till the money rolls in to do the streets, because there are so many working pieces, and Tom or Andy can jump in, because we're relying on the county to save money to do our roads. So we have to wait for a year to get enough money. Then our constituents or, you know, citizens aren't going to see a road started till the year after. So I'm not really sure what the actual, you see what I'm saying, Tom, is marking in pain. But I think you guys, Andy, want to join us?
Well, you know, just a comment. I mean, we've proven as a city that we can exercise the IGA with the county. There's no question about it.
But can they do it? Well, I know that they're going to do it in a timely manner.
It's just a matter of getting on the calendar and appropriate like we did this year.
So we don't have to wait for those monies to come in?
Well, you know? I would suggest you wait till the money comes in and you know you've got it, because the county's going to bill us as soon as they do the work.
Well, so we're going to have HERF dollars that's available, too.
Excuse me. When you talk about the HERF, the street improvement paid with HERF loan, that's no more HERF money coming in than we're already got, and that HERF money is already earmarked for the people that are already using that HERF money, correct?
Correct.
All right.
But if we had to make a shift and move other expenses from to the general fund, I mean, there's ways, there's another mechanism there that I was just pointing out.
Yeah.
And if we found ourselves...
And all the HERF recipients are going, wait a minute. Yeah, so...
Well, you know, we have two people in our HERF fund. You know, and when you look at the HERF fund dollars this year, we have $100,000 of that allocation that's just going to streetlights. So, you know...
And the streetlight thing is killing us.
And you're ready?
Yeah, thank you. The streetlights, the expense of streetlights, and we're one of the only communities... The only community I found in the state our size that pays for streetlights out of HERF funds. It's legal to do, but the majority of communities, and I will also tell you that I've not found a single community our size that pays salaries out of HERF funds. Those are all general fund. All that comes out of general fund in the smaller cities. We happen to take everything and the kitchen sink out of HERF funds that we possibly can, and so the money doesn't go to road repair. We repair our vehicles and that the streets department operates out of HERF funds. We pay street lights out of HERF funds. And it's all legal to do. The safety equipment that we buy for the inmates and the weed eaters and all those supplies that we use when we're cleaning right-of-ways comes out of HERF funds. So we're not, you know, most communities allocate HERF funds for street repair or street repair material. We don't. We, in fact, take, I think when you look at the last budget we did, Sharon and I talked about it, and we put a little extra money, we shuffled some money around to put more into street repair materials. But quite frankly, we're going to be paying more for street lights than we are the two men. We're going to be paying more to light the potholes in the streets than the people that we can afford to repair them. And that's one item in there, but when you look at a budget and one of your largest single line items is streetlights, and it's not even payroll, we have a budget that's really off kilter in a municipal budget.
What?
Councilmember Connors.
And I don't want to talk historically or anecdotally, but I think APS was ignored for an awful long time, and this was a huge, you know, a quantum leap in this maintenance, you know, because it just wasn't, nobody wanted to have that conversation with them because they knew what was going to happen.
That's right.
So credit to you for having the conversation. Unfortunately, we have this big bump, but but we're also whole and we're welcome to a conversation at, you know, an APA, because, you know, when things like that happen and they finally sit at a table, there's no wiggle room.
Oh.
They've waited for 8 years to have a conversation.
That's right.
And now they're having it. It's like, here, this is the price.
And by the way, you're going to pay the same that everybody else is paying.
Yeah,
I
hear you complaining about $100,000, not complaining, but expressing $100,000, you know, line item for streetlights. There's a history to that cost, though.
Absolutely there is. But we are one of the few cities, well, the only city I found our size that actually pays for streetlights.
Just to jump in here, just specifically two streetlights, you know, Sharon and I, we were talking on various projects years ago, from a cost containment standpoint, is, you know, getting a couple of interns, if you will, to come in and do a streetlight analysis for us, which we can say, hey, look, is our lighting grid squarely? Is it appropriate for the size of the community, for how we our roads are laid out? To look at that particular line item to say, not saying we're going to cut off all the streets. I'm certainly not saying that at all. But are there opportunities to say, look, you got duplication of lights here, let's turn this one off, but go through the entire city to actually accomplish that, to address that particular item, that particular line item? So I just wanted to throw that out.
Mm-hmm. Councilmember Klein.
Back to the HERF funds. What are we anticipating this year?
And they put it, yeah,
390.
Yeah, because I take these numbers from what you have, and those are the numbers you'll see plugged into the budget. This is, so let's see what it was last year. Yeah. Just an incident here, but. A different book.
I can just let you know some of the other expenses we're facing in your streets department is that about 7-8 years ago, we bought 10, 15-year-old dump trucks. So now they're 20 years old. And just had to have a cylinder replaced in a dump truck. That's going to be about $6,000. But all our equipment,
our new city manager has allowed us to buy some new equipment, but everything we have is broken. We have trucks with no seats in them. I don't have a single vehicle in the streets department that meets the Arizona Department of Safety road standards. Not one. So as of this year, they have to all be brought up. They have to be able to pass an inspection for Arizona Department of Transportation. And I want you to know, there is not a single vehicle in that department that hits the highway that can pass a safety inspection. We have doors that are screwed into the side of the truck because there are no engines. The guys are climbing out of windows to get in and out of trucks. Our boom truck came off the assembly line 37 years ago. It can barely operate. The last time we put the banners and the Christmas tree lights up over Main Street, I don't know if you noticed, but there was hydraulic fluid all over the street because the truck leaks. There's no way to stop the leaks. Can't even get parts of the truck so old. And I'm not saying that we're, but we're using them. And I've never brought this up to the council. We're just making do with what we have. But we are coming to the end of the make-do road. There's just nothing. There's nothing left. I mean, tires for those vehicles. Just to give you an idea, they're $600 a piece, and that's on state contract.
That's the same for four. $600
per tire, and there's six tires on a truck.
No, you're talking trucks. How about a regular vehicle?
Radios is still big. It depends on the size of the tire, Tom. The tires are running between $120 and $200 a piece, depending on the size of the tire. And we only buy tires on state contract. So we're just coming to the end of it. Well, the equipment that we have, and again, I bring this up, and you've all heard it 100 times, but I can't legally operate the boom truck with two men. It's against the law. I can't safely put my guys out on the street on a boom truck with two men. And we do it every time we use that truck. We put our men in harm's way because inmates can't stand out there in direct traffic. And so I've got one man who can't do traffic on both ends. And I can't put an inmate in the boom truck. So we just operate. We're putting them in harm's way when we put them out of these vehicles.
No more.
I know, and that's what I've been saying is no more. No, you can't use the dump truck because the door is bolted on with screws. It doesn't work. And I don't want you getting in a wreck and being trapped in that truck. But how can I pick up hot mix? I can't even go pick up hot mix or cold mix because I don't have a truck that's roadworthy. Now, I'm getting them roadworthy, and we've been working on this slowly. But it's not right. It's not fair to them to do that. Yet we do it every day because we still have a service that we're trying to provide for everybody.
Well, certainly one of my suggestions is we have a capital improvements plan so we can see all of this for all departments laid out before us. So we're not dealing with individual. We're buying a recycling truck and we're buying an ambulance. We need to assess this in the context of the total needs of the community in terms of capital improvement.
Let me make this statement. About 6 years ago, I gave a speech where I mentioned that, especially smaller communities, we are increasingly going to have to depend upon ourselves. Because state shared revenues, I was talking about the HOOF funds, are going to be reduced, just like the CDBG grants are. Everything is going to be reduced. So, to the public that may or may not be watching this, or listening to this, this is your community. Your government's not separate from you. The government is yours. And so it's what kind of community you want to live in. So, unfortunately, or fortunately, the reality is you have to pay for it. That's how it gets done. And so it's what type of community you want to live in. But into the future years, you're going to see CDBG grants and also HERF funds cut, just to name a couple. The state of Maricopa County is probably going to try to gobble most of that up. I think that's coming down. I'm convinced of it on a state level.
Again, back reinforcing my point number one is that we do systematically present this type of information to the community rather than just once a year saying we're dire straits and we've got all these problems and then we kick the can down the road for another year. I think citizens need to be aware of the state of the city and help make those choices in terms of the level of city services desire.
Councilmember Denny, can I go to Councilmember Downey?
Andy, how much does it cost to fix a hole? Does it depend on how big it is, or?
It depends on how big it is. Really, it depends on what we're fixing. Because we have two different kinds of roads. We have the majority of our roads are chip seal, uh-huh. And so fixing a chip seal road is a little. And then we
the other, our other roads are hot mix. The hot mix and cold mix are about the same price per ton. We heat our cold mix because we put down a good amount of tack oil because we have found that those patches last longer. The problem with patching chip seal roads is that here's your first hole. I guarantee you, and I won't even make you the bet because I don't want to take your money to be cruel, the next hole is going to be on the downside of the last hole because the water's already gotten underneath the street. The damage is done. So when you, for instance, when you're driving on School Terrace and it's a series of hole that have been patched, it just started with one little pothole. But you can't, it's almost impossible to patch chip seal and make that patch last or not have another patch that's downhill from it. Those end up being expensive patches because if you've patched once, you know you'll be back after the next rain to do the second patch. The truth is, and the city manager, I go over this all the time, putting down 3 inches of hot mix everywhere would give us a much longer life on our roads. But 95% of our roads are chip sealed. We'll never have enough money to do it that way. And our problem is, Shirley, is that we, the life of chip seal is 6, 7, maybe 8 years. We have 12, 14 years on our chip seal roads. That's why all of a sudden, after 2 or 3 years of bad rain, all of our roads are just exploding. But I will remind you all, and City Manager Plunkett used to say that, the city in the last 5 years has put more asphalt and cold seal and chip seal down than the previous 10 years ever did. Right. The problem is that no one remembers how bad Arizona Street was. They only know how bad the biggest hole in town is, and that's in front of their eyes.
And well, we had a settlement with Arizona Water, and that money is gone. So we
did a lot of roads.
Right. We now have, again, the dirtier discussion is that, you know, again, that's another argument. There's arguments pro and con here in terms of doing the street improvement now with finance it or spread it out over a construction project each year as the money comes in over 8 years. So there's pros and cons, and at some point we need to address that. I guess I also, several people brought this to my attention to explore the refinancing of our wastewater loan, which currently is 4.2%. Certainly interest rates are lower than that. Is this an opportunity to reduce our sewer bills by refinancing?
Yeah, and Sharon and I, we talked about it, and so she's actually started putting her research
right,
on it.
Right. I'm just brainstorming here. We had a discussion in terms of the need to clean up our balance sheet in terms of we continue to bill people for sewers that aren't paid and whether there's an opportunity to do a virtual sewer disconnect option in conjunction with Arizona Water or something like that so we can verify that would help us clean up our balance sheet, that we're no longer billing people when in reality the structure is no longer in use. So I'm just brainstorming.
Is that is that utility company willing to work in tandem with us, and is it legal and all that? You know, I mean, what's up with that?
I have heard of one situation, but it wasn't with a private utility. It was with a water district in a county. They currently have an agreement. One of the things that we do plan on bringing forward to the council this year is the whole revamping of that sewer billing, to clean that all up. We also really need to take not only at our look at those rates, but the other ones within our code. Because of certain legislation that was just passed, we are going to probably be required to go through our code and make some of these changes to the wording. Yeah. And so we might as well just do it all at that time. We've met with the realtors, the mayor and Mr. Johnson and I, and there are some, they have some really valid points that need to be addressed. Mm-hmm. And so we want to work forward to that. We also want to define clearly how we can turn off these abandoned properties, and that's pretty much what you're talking about. So that all needs to go into the code, because right now it's not real clear who has the authority to say that. I'll give you a quick example we're dealing with right now. We have a property that 9, 10 years ago they died, and now their children are dealing with this debt. It's abandoned. They're not there, but they don't own the property. The property is not in the children's name. So even though they're trying to give us instructions on how to proceed with this property, they may not have the authority to turn it on.
And the thing about this is really difficult is that they're getting the bill. Right? Because the bill's in their name.
Well, no, the bill is not in their name because the only time that we change our billing matches the county recorder's office. And there's different discrepancies, and you know, we can go into this form when we actually look at a good example. I'll tell you, I have one that's up on, I think, OK Street, I'm not sure. The county has it zoned for a duplex. The man made it a single resident home. He calls me all the time because I bill him as a duplex, because that's what the county says. Two things may have happened here. He may have done these renovations without approval through the county, so the zoning wasn't corrected in their book. So there's all kinds of things that kind of feed in. Yeah, but you know what I'm... So our policy is, and it even states there, and it's in the property owner's name. So when that changes is when our records change. We can mail the bill to anybody they want us to mail it to, but the official owner needs to match with the county.
But Sharon, in that particular case that you're talking about, are the children using this home for a vacation home or occasionally coming down and staying in it? If they're not, why did you just sell it?
Well, and that's the whole thing. In this particular case, I believe the name might be the sister, so it might be a family dispute. So I have one telling me to do this, and I have another one that is really the legal owner. So we have to, and I don't even know if they're...
Well, anyway, this is something that I think we need to look at in terms of...
And that will all come to
year ahead, right?
Right, and it'll all come to when we have to revamp because of the new law that was passed that we can't transition the debt from one person to the other. So we'll have to look at all that, and it's all going to come before you.
Let me make one qualification on that for the public benefit. Sanitation and wastewater... monies that come in do not go to the general fund. They go into the enterprise fund. So it's important to make that distinction.
Thank you, Mayor, because it is important. Everybody know that. That's exactly right. Those divisions need to operate. They need to pull their own.
Councilman?
Okay.
Item 5, again, I appreciate this discussion here. So obviously there's issues of concern to all of us. Fred Miller made these points, and I want to reinforce them. Community development, we want to maintain the current budget line of $10,000 in support of the economic development initiatives. It's interesting that Sierra Vista has been going through these business analysis. I've been reading in the paper. Sierra Vista spent last year in their community development department $243,000. They just recently funded a $45,000 consultant to come in and lead an exercise, a study of rebranding. These are things that the IBISD committee has done. We've just gone through the rebranding. We actually went as far as designing new visuals. That's been presented to council. It was done probably for only a couple of $100 in terms of the photography and the development of artwork. Also, as indicated by Fred, a part of that money was used to work cooperatively with the Copper Queen Community Hospital in funding the assisted living feasibility study. Certainly the Economic Development Committee has scheduled at their April 29th meeting, I asked them, let's formalize our economic development goals. So when we discuss this officially in terms of our budget process, I will be able to provide you with the economic development goals as formalized by the IBISD. So we could be talking very specifically about what direction is that body taking. Also, what Fred indicated, we did increase our lodging tax, and I applaud citizens for doing that. We need to, of course, make budget adjustments for that. It was targeted, that 1% increase for overnight development and promotion of Bisbee as an overnight destination. And as Fred indicated, that will include design and implementation of rebranding efforts, as well as effective use of electronic media. The city's Discover, whatever he said, discoverbisbee.com, as well as promoting to Tucson and Phoenix. Police department. We certainly have talked about this. We're now, as someone indicated, we are spending close to $2 million a year on our police department, which comes out to $350 a person, $850 per household. We are, I think, in kind of a transition, and I'm really pleased, and as Sergeant Achebe is acting chief, that I think we have an opportunity to contract with an individual consultant to look at our police department in terms of reviewing operating procedures and policy, explore staffing alternatives, make recommendations to control costs and improve operations. That might be done quite cheaply through an IGA with the Sierra Vista Police Department or the Cochise Sheriff's Department, or it could be an independent consultant. But I think that this is in a period of transition, an opportunity to review how we've operated and look at what's the funding in the future and how might we address that. Certainly that study, I think, should look at opportunities, at least explore the opportunities to contract for dispatch and other services with City of Sierra Vista or Cochise County Sheriff's Department. These are things that could be addressed with that that assessment.
I don't understand that. I think our police department is fine the way it is.
I agree. I just said that earlier. We are, however, in a situation where we've got constraints on budget, and I think it's a grand opportunity at this transition to look at. There's never any, I mean, it's not, no way am I saying, I just got through saying, I applaud. I mean, I can't imagine anybody other than our police officers handling this unique community. But there is an opportunity as we're making transitions. We need, for example, an assessment of whether we can save money by contracting dispatch service.
Councilmember Klein.
We do have a unique community here. And as far as dispatching, going to contract dispatching I don't know if you've ever sat in dispatch, but to sit and listen to him, a call comes in, and it doesn't matter which dispatcher it is, they automatically know, and then they send out, to the guys or whatever, but they don't even have to say anything, they just know that it's, Mr. Dunn that lives in the pink house at the end of the road with the purple mailbox or something, you go to a community or contract dispatch, sometimes even we get, county calls, or county will get our calls, and if we go to some kind of a contract dispatcher, like through Sierra Vista or whatever, a lot of those things, more of them, I think, are going to happen. And then all that does is delay our officers or our medics getting to, our residents. I just have concern. I guess we can look at anything, but I just have concerns with dispatch.
My concern is we've had discussions, there's always been an emotional reactions, just what you stated. And at some point, we need someone who sits down, is advising us in terms of so as we can assess this, other than emotional reaction, that it's better to have our own people here in Bisbee doing our dispatch service. That's certainly my opinion also. But I think we need someone else to come in with the professional eyes, in terms of helping us make that decision. It's not something that gut reaction we decide on that. And certainly we are at a point, again, we're spending $2 million on police, and that's going up as we increase retirement. My earlier question, what level of service do citizens want to pay for?
And how much are you going to pay for it and so on?
I think we probably can get it free, as I just indicated.
Hmm. That's a lot.
Sure, possible.
Okay.
What'd you say?
I said lots of luck to get a consultant.
Well, I think we've had some conversations.
I didn't hear you. I was just listening. Yeah.
I think we've had some conversations. I mean, I think expressed to you as well as to me from the police chief in Sierra Vista as an example in terms of someone that could be an IGA to perform that. And that overview, again, it's not an evaluation, it's just an overview. It's a different eyes in terms of looking at that department.
Is that Chief Allenin?
Pardon?
Chief Allenin from Sierra Vista?
Again, I'm not recommending that, but anyway, I'm just saying those are options that I think we're at a point of needing to use.
You know, go ahead. I said something recently, and you haven't said anything for a while, so go ahead, John.
I was soaking it all in.
No, you weren't.
I have to agree. I don't think that there is any reason not to do that type of consultant. I mean, we have a great department, but for every place, there's always room for improvement. And there's room for learning back and forth as far as how one department is handling things versus another department. And you, if it works, or it's something that might work here, I mean, we benefit from it. I think this is a benefit for everybody to do this.
Well, I just think it's an excellent opportunity with Sergeant Echeve to do this. I mean, in the past, you couldn't help but do this without it implying that we're criticizing the chief, that we're confronting the chief, that we don't agree with how he's doing business. Here we're just getting professional eyes to share with us, and it's going to be an interaction with our chief and whoever does this. It certainly has a way of, again, of helping us analyze the operation of a police department. Otherwise, it's not something I have any direct experience in. So,
I'll just say this, and I certainly deal with Councilman Banks. One of the things to consider is it's that the practice of having an outside consultant is it's a very, very much a common practice. I know even when I was in Tucson, every 3 years, we might have an outside consultant look at our practices, look at our operations, look at our procedures. Now, whether we realize it or not, we already have that right now. Finance, and that happens every year. Look at our, look at our books, look at our procedures, and our financial, our account may say, look, Shane, did you know about this law, this change? This may help you going forward along the way, and so it's certainly not anything necessarily new to say, to bring an outside consultant, a different set of eyes come in to look at your processes, your procedures, and say, hey, look, this is what you guys are doing right, but here's another opportunity to improve. Oh, okay, I didn't realize that. And so it certainly isn't a criticism. I don't think Sharon feels like it's a criticism to have an accountant come in and look at her books or whatever the case may be, because they may see some things that she may not see and it's an opportunity to correct. So.
Don't we have that with the sheriff's department?
No, I don't think that. I mean, do they come in and
have that with the sheriff's department?
I'm sorry, you mean if they could come in and do that type of study for us? Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, don't they come in every once in a while, and don't you guys have a reciprocal?
We are developing a better relationship with the Sheriff's Department, by all means, and we are working together. They are helping us at great lengths right now in the current investigation.
Chief, would you want to come up to the podium? We have a conversation going on between Councilmember Dowdy and the Chief of Police, Mr. Choppy.
So the Sheriff's Department, we do have a working relationship with them. We work very well together. The department as a whole, I would agree with what was said. We do have a very good department, but there is always room for improvement. And we are currently taking steps, Staff Sergeant Coronado and myself, to make it as best we possibly can. And, we're looking at all avenues of the department, I would say open-mindedly, to try to find out where we can do things better. If we can do something better with less effort and get the same result or even a better result, then we obviously want to go that route. So, we're trying to do those things now.
Sheriff Dan also kind of indicated to me that there's a reciprocal.
Yes, without a doubt.
How do you feel about a consultant coming in. I don't want to put you on the spot,
yeah.
But I am.
I would say probably a little anxious, if I was being honest. You know, it makes me feel a little anxious because... you know, we're in the process of trying to do a lot of things. You know, I speak to the city manager on a very regular basis. We even meet. You know, I met with the sheriff's department today before I came here, as a matter of fact. You know, we're looking at other ideas, other avenues, and you know, if that was a decision to make, that for us to reach out to them to come in and look at how we can do things better. You know, then that's we would have to support that. I think we have some good ideas right now, starting Court Hall and myself, that we're in the process of trying to implement and iron out. You know, are they going to work? Are they going to be great? I don't know, but we're willing to try to make things better. And you know, like we had a conversation with the rest of the department, the patrol division anyway, and we explained to them, you know, we're going to do things a little different. We've never done them this way before, but it might work and it might not. If it doesn't work, we're going to go back to the old way of doing things. But if it works, well, if it makes you guys happier and it works and it makes us happier, well, we're all the better for it. You know, so we get a better job, a better quality response. So.
Thank you. You know, and having a consultant come in will just give you more help in identifying those. It doesn't mean that you have to necessarily take all those. But it helps you in taking a look at the department, what you're doing already.
Yes,
Chief. Thanks. Thank you, Mayor. Thanks, Anna. And thanks, Chief, for the willingness. I really, really appreciate that. And actually, how do you feel when you're going to be audited? a little bit like
that. Just you know, that comes with it.
And it happens every year. Yeah. Yeah. It's compelled. It's, you know, you're compelled.
And it's not perfect every year either. So I, you know, go back, I look at it again and think, how did I miss it? And I put in additional mechanisms to review those processes before they come back again.
Thanks, Sharon.
Thank you.
Chief, he just kind of went through an evaluation process by an outside consultant through his ISO rating process, and it indicates here, here's what we can do departmentally, which we'll go through in the budget process to try to work on getting that ISO rating down. Is it beneficial to us as a group to say, look, let's allocate more money in this particular line item for them to make the necessary improvements, bring that ISO rating down to benefit, hey, does that bring all the homeowners, you know, insurance rates down?
Everybody.
You know, and so that's the line of thinking that, you know, the chief and I, we teamed up today, that the line of thinking that we have. Let's look at it, you know, by way of that outside consultant pointing out certain things that need to be done. You know, that second set of eyes is very beneficial to be perfect.
Councilman Klein, do you have a comment?
I do, and I just, because we're, you know, they're here and we're talking about this, I just have to say that I really like the way that our department is going. I like the fact that the two of you are working together, you're talking to your men, and believe me, I love Chief Dawkins, but it's a new era, and I like the approach that you guys are taking, and I appreciate it very much. And as far as like a consultant or extra eyes, if you will, I do like the way that Sheriff Daniels is handling things. I like that you're having open dialogue. And the fact that you back them up on their calls and they back you up on your calls, I think I like that better rather than Sierra Vista with Chief Allen, who was getting ready to retire. And I mean, you don't work together. And so I think somebody who works a little bit more closely with our department, certainly, you know, to keep that dialogue open.
Yes. Well, and Sheriff Daniels is, you know, he's extended his hand more than once to us, and you know we've reached out a few times here recently, but you know he started with Bisbee Police Department. You know, that's where he started his career in law enforcement, and he's always got a soft spot for Bisbee, and he's, you know, we had a tragic event that occurred a couple weekends ago, and you know I heard from at least three different deputies on scene that they heard through their chain of command that Bisbee's got a blank check. Whatever we need, we'll get from the Sheriff's Department. And to have that type of assistance and that type of response in something as tragic as that was is we can't survive without that right now. You know, we're kind of short. They're helping us with other programs. We've modified the schedule a little bit in order to provide a detective full time. Now that detective is still going to have to help Sergeant Coronado and I cover calls on some days because it's just going to be the three of us working day shifts some days. But there's going to be the majority of his time will be able to be focused on investigations and you know some of the things that we talked about in the meeting in Ward 1 a couple months ago. You know, we were able to make that happen, and we were able to reach out to the Sheriff's Department to help us bring that investigator, offer him a little bit of on-the-job training that we didn't have the ability to offer in-house. And so, you know, we're really utilizing them in that aspect. And so, you know, I'm sure if we reached out to them and asked them to come in and give us their ideas, they would be more willing to come in and help.
Who would?
Yes. But, and, you know, having said that, like I said, I met with Chief Deputy Thad Smith. We met this afternoon for about probably 2 hours, 2.5 hours. And those are some of the things that we're discussing and in open dialogue between him and I. You know, the directions, you know, the plans, you know, and you know, getting some input back and forth. So obviously not in a formal setting, but, you know, some of those things are being done as we speak. And there's other agencies as well that we're, you know, kind of talking to and trying to draw every bit of information from everywhere we can, you know, to make ourselves better for it.
Without an objection from council and staff, I think that this is what we need to do. We need to get through Councilmember Dunn's I have some certain questions as far as expenses, revenue shortfalls, and increases in expenses, an overview of where the budget's at, and where those might be questioned, or solutions might be brought forth on that. But I think we need to move along. We're an hour and a half in.
Well, certainly a systematic review is much for our education, meaning council and the community. I mean, you're talking about the things that you're working on. Systematic review would allow all of us to more fully understand that and make some choices. A fire is kind of a similar thing in terms of looking at increasing revenue. What can we do? Right now we rely largely, totally on sales tax in terms of general fund. Certainly, particularly in terms of fire protection, I feel we need to be supporting the fire department more in terms of property tax. Certainly, what is most benefited by a fire department is property, and I'd like to explore in terms of whether a fire district that could be established to subcontract with the Bisbee Fire Department for service, so there would be some property tax revenue could actually even expand our existing district in terms of including San Jose Fire District and so forth, in terms of sharing then that cost with a property tax revenue as well as our current sales tax. Also, every small community that I've ever lived in certainly used community fundraising to purchase fire and ambulance equipment. Certainly the reference was made that we have a fire fund. Certainly those people who say, who are avid supporters of the fire department, I think that they need to join me in stepping forward and contributing to fundraising efforts to buy equipment. And I certainly would want to look at that in terms of another way of raising funds. I certainly would like to challenge in terms of a personal challenge in terms of again communities who support the fire department stepping forward and showing their support with financial support. And certainly we also have the option in terms of frankly of funding the increase in public safety retirement by putting a partial sales tax increase on the ballot. Also, continually we raise questions in terms of we stand up here and we tell the chief, tell us where you can cut costs. And it never goes much further than that. Simply when I sat down with the chief when I first came on the council, it became obvious to me that our biggest expenditure in terms of operation of the fire department is personnel. If we're serious about cutting costs, if we're serious about what you hear on the street about we've got a police or fire department that's more expensive than we can afford, then citizens need to realize what the options are. And I remember at one point when I first sat down with the chief, I said, you know, at some point in time, I would like us to do an analysis of the difference in terms of what would be involved in terms of cost savings as well as implications in terms of response time, et cetera, of moving from a 6-7 to a 4-5 person shifts. And I remember when I said that, not because I support that, but I think at some point in time we need to share that information objectively, not emotionally, but objectively with citizens so they can make a choice. Indeed, do we want to cut the fire department or do we not? I remember at the time I shared this that the chief's voice started rising as I stated that, and certainly that's obviously not, you know, he thought I was criticizing how he's not doing business. But frankly, if we don't look at that option and share that openly with citizens, I don't see how, you know, we don't need to keep saying each year, cut your costs. Like if we don't cut personnel costs, there really isn't a whole lot of cost cutting to make. And we need to, of course, evaluate those options, including that one there. And certainly I would like to see us also consider them on call and volunteer reserve firefighters in terms of how you would supplement that reduced staffing. I also would like to see us look at competitive salary schedule to retain key personnel. Certainly the chief's report to us showed a 25% turnover. I think we're particularly having difficulty retaining paramedics. I think we need to look at paying properly to retain those. Again, these are all increased costs. How do we, in turn, then cut costs to offset that? We just had a presentation from the Palominas IGA. There's a cost involved, and I want to see what those costs are in helping me analyze that. Certainly, I can see that would be improved service. But there's a cost associated with this, and I think citizens need some help in assessing that. Nine, certainly I want to applaud citizens for passing the 1 cent sales tax increase. We are certainly developing a street and infrastructure improvement plan. I think the staff has already started that in terms of if we did this year by year, how we might approach that. That's going to be a political decision, and we'll be involved in that. I also would like us to pick up with the FIMI settlement. It would certainly be nice if we could settle that. They've made us an offer. I'd like to do the counter offer in terms of if we can have a settlement, we can use that money up front to get this started. 10, Public Works, calling us a welcome to Bisbee. I as we move into looking at the infrastructure improvement plan, street infrastructure, I'm going to be lobbying for as an initial project, first-year project in terms of our 1 cent sales tax use, as a redesign and repaving of Naka Road, Arizona 80 East entrance in Old Bisbee. It's 0.2 miles long, and I like that to include then looking at the ADOT right-of-way on both sides of 80, as well as the city parking lot and that design. And to include some gateway signage in terms of welcome to Bisbee, setting aside area for sculpture garden and more parking in terms of greeting people, improving, in essence, tax revenue in terms of how we right now, you know, how it is to drive into Old Bisbee in terms of not yet potholes, but they're real close to potholes in terms of how we now welcome people. I also am presenting this is certainly not, Andy has already given me designs here in terms of doing this. We did sign a sister city accord with Naco Sonora, and there is work being done there in terms of putting a sign at the border in in Mexico in terms of bienvenidos, welcome, Bisbee, Naco, whichever side you're coming from. I would like to do a similar sign at not only at the entrance to Old Bisbee, but also then at the southern city limits of Naco Highway, saying the same. And Andy's already given me a design in terms of doing that. Again, a large percentage of our, I think 40%, as I said earlier, of Safeway's trade is to Naco Sonora residents. We need to welcome them. Parks, trail construction. I would like us to give thought to providing access and signage to a hiking trail on the canyon walls above Old Bisbee as an overnight visitor destination, or attraction, pardon me. Right now, I don't know whether Justin told me that somebody just took him out on this trail, and what a treat it is in terms of a unique experience that really literally no other community offers in terms of being able to walk, again, over Bisbee, look down into the city. The problem is not trails. The trails are there. It's access to those trails and signage of those trails in terms of how you get to them. And Mayor Badal and I, a year ago, met with the trail development specialist with the National Park Service, who was assigned temporarily the Chiricahua National Monument. And when we sat down with him, he brought his laptop, and on that laptop he had a satellite picture of Bisbee and all those trails with an overlay of the assessment maps. And with one possible small exception, all those trails on public land, city property, and we were able on that satellite literally zero right in and look every little inch of that, every foot of that trail in terms of assessing that trail. Again, it's one more thing, an incentive of people staying overnight to have that fun experience. Also, I understand that the Copper Queen Community Hospital has offered equipment, exercise equipment, and we need to assess whether we want to accept it or not. There's a cost to placing it, and the trails to equip it. Wastewater, I would like to host an opening to the solar installation. We are putting this on, and I think we got a lot to crow about here. I would like to do something in terms of an event. Evergreen Cemetery, I am the liaison to the cemetery committee. One of the things that I specifically included in terms of the proposal for the 1% sales tax is that it could also be used for the repaving of the Circle Drive between gates A and B in the cemetery. And we keep coming back to heating and cooling in City Hall. Again, I thank you for opportunity to present these.
Thank you, Councilman. We've been going for about an hour and 45 minutes. It's up to you whether you want to proceed. This could go on for another hour and a half. I certainly have some questions, and most of my questions are about public consumption, so they understand our process. Would you like to take a 7-minute break?
Yes.
Yeah. Without objection?
No.
Without objection from the council and staff, we will be in recess for about 7 minutes. Or 10. We can move into some other areas. This question I have is primarily for the finance director, or whoever would like to participate. We are having some difficulties with the PSPRS, and I presume this increase that we're going to have this year, correct me if I'm mistaken, in the neighborhood of about, I'm going to be conservative, $300,000?
Right. Real quick, it's closer to like $249,000 for police and $428,000 and just those two retirement benefits. Ms. Moss, another thing I'd like to share with you is our personnel director. We have a really tentative number. We think there will be an increase
in our health insurance. She was thinking about 5%. They're diligently working on that, trying to get it down as far, if not to zero. We should have more information on that and the other benefits next week, we were hoping. So right now we're looking at a projected increase in our benefits between PSPRS and the health insurance, about $442,000.
Just a little update on that. I had been conversing with the Mayor of Douglas, Mr. Ortega, Mayor Ortega, on this particular issue, PSPRS, and obviously they're getting hit hard too, not as bad as us percentage-wise, but they're getting up there. And so what he suggested to me last week was, I know Sharon's been, Ms. Cuomo has been working with the league as well on this, that we would accede and let them take the front stage on this, because he said if Douglas and Bisbee gets together with some other communities, it would create a redundancy problem. And so they're already going to be presenting stuff. And so he suggested, or a little more than suggested, that we take a back seat and let them push that with the task force as well. And so he's aware of the equalization process that I was hoping for, but I think I think the league as a whole is much more powerful than six or eight cities, small towns in southern Arizona. So I agreed with him that we would let them proceed with that and with our suggestions. So just an update to the mayor and council staff and the public of where that's at. And hopefully we will get some resolution on that, hopefully a reduction. The Arizona League of Cities and Towns is a powerful political entity. It's all 91 cities in this state. Mm-hmm. And when they present stuff over the legislature, it carries a lot of political weight. And also, I've been sort of working with a slight pressure on McCain's office on the restoration of the CDBG grants. An update on that. I met with Cheryl Shea Salcedo. She came down about 3 days after I gave a little presentation in Douglas. And I think that she wanted to get that corralled and get a hold of that, because I, in a kind of a soft way, I mentioned that that could be a campaign issue for McCain next year. And so I think she wanted to jump on that right away, and I think we're going to get some movement in that area. I didn't ask for a lot. I just said $500 million returned to the CDBG grant funding across the nation. I thought 500 was reasonable, but actually it's been cut $1.5 billion. So I thought 500 per year, taken out of Homeland Security, returned to CDBG grant funding over 3 years to get it back up to the level of where it was at. And I'm sure that 91 cities in this state would all support that. And she's aware of that too. And Mr. Johnson, the city manager, sat in on that meeting, and I was delicate, but she knew where I was at. Just an update on that.
Other questions or comments from the council?
I'm just concerned the ideal of equalization, without the work, those cities who are paying less than us need to agree to help finance those of us who are at the top of the list. And that's certainly, there are people who like the system as it is right now because they're paying a lot less than we are. And equalization then would require them agreeing to share our costs. And I don't know that that's going to politically happen.
Well, my argument in that particular area would have been Bisbee has 5,500 people, more or less. And for that to be absorbed, let's say, with Scottsdale and Phoenix and Mesa and Chandler, et cetera, Bisbee's population probably isn't as much as Scottsdale Road. Scottsdale Road probably has as many people on that one road as all of Bisbee. So including these little towns in that process is really not going to move their rate up very much. You understand what I'm saying? At least that was going to be my argument. And hopefully the league will take that process up. And we are hopeful in that area. And Ms. Buono, I know that she communicates with the league quite often. And so they know it's a serious concern in the state. We need a solution for it, because many small communities, and Sierra Vista's having problems too with that. So it's a concern, statewide concern. So we hopefully we can get that addressed and reduced. Other comments and questions? Just an update on those two particular issues. So it appears that we, and I know it's premature, and I know the numbers are not all in for this year, and I'm not going to go into that because that's somewhat speculative, but there are some serious concerns in this particular budget. And You're going to have to be clever. You're going to have to be creative to create a balanced budget this year.
We, at this point, we just have a couple of things that we needed you to be aware of. And some of those, as you've gotten a report in your packet, we don't need to go over it tonight, but we have some serious financial needs that are city full, which will need to be, some of this has to be addressed before we open. And the rest of this has to be addressed next year. I'm talking about the pool. Also, the HVAC system, both this building and the library. And I think we had a couple other topics there.
Well, one just hit the pool. The only reason why I was saying it's a pool right now is because it's pressed to open. And we've had a great relationship this year with Mr. Hooper over at the county. And so, and if you can just kind of hit some of the key items and why.
Some of the key items. If you've got the packet here, and the first item is a chair. You see a cost for a scout anchor lift for footing. We found a chair for less than this. We think we can probably get away with about half of this. ADA is the law of the land now. The United States of America has had 20 years to prepare for the Americans with Disability Act. The act states very clearly as of January, people with handicaps have to be provided equal access to all any kind of public facility. So we don't have a chairlift at our pool to get someone handicapped in it. We had a plastic ramp that we was jury rigged built. It does not meet ADA standards. This is the situation, and Carl Hooper did explain this today. There are a group of handicapped citizens who are very concerned. They are going from hotel to hotel, from public pool to public pool. Once they file a complaint, and you are in violation of an ADA rule, there's an automatic fine. There's no debating it. This is a law that was passed by Congress 20 years ago. We've had 20 years to prepare. So a chair has to be installed with the pool or the pool can. That's just all there is to it.
Okay.
So about $3,500, $4,000 is what we think we can do it for, Mayor.
Okay.
Another item on the pool, if you go to the second page, it's above four, number four. And this is, again, I didn't know about this until we started looking in the pool. There are covers over the return system of the pool that pulls the water through the bottom and it pulls it back out. Those covers have to be changed. They're rated for 3 years. As far as I know, ours are 15 years old, and they have to be changed. And I don't know what that's going to cost because we didn't empty the pool this year to try and save money. They're not emptying it and refilling it. We think the pool's better. The consultant that took this plan together for us is the one that says, no, stop emptying your pool. You're doing more damage to it by emptying it. You're better off leaving it full of money at the cold season. I will tell you that this year we didn't use any funding with the pool for the first time in 5 years. We kept the pool in there, so that was good. But those have to be replaced. There's no talking about that. They have to be replaced. And then the third thing, the baby pool will not be open. And it won't be open until we go through a very extensive, he's estimated this out at $15,000, so there'll be no baby pool, period. The chlorine is administered in the pool, it's on the wrong end of the distribution system. Carl Hooper talked to Tom and I today. He is fine with us just replumbing it and putting it on the other end and still feeding it by hand. So this year, for about $4,500 for the chair, $2,000 for the covers, and I don't know what the plumber's bill will be. I don't think it should be more than $1,000. We're going to need $7,000 to open the pool, and that doesn't include the vacuum cleaner for the pool that I cannot repair. It's sold, I can't get parts, and right now those are coming in at about $4,000. So we're going to need between $10,000 and $12,000 to open the pool. And we can't open the pool without all of these elements. You just kick this down the street so many years in a row. And then the other part of this is that all the other things you're seeing under here, under state administrative code issues with ADEQ, they requested that Tom and I put together a plan. In the next 4 years, in order to keep the pool open, we'll have to address all $285,000 requests.
Okay.
And now this is one consultant's estimate to address these particular issues. And so the significance of us having this conversation now, I mean, there are certain items that will be pulled out of this year's budget. But going forward, you'll see other items related to the pool simply because, you know, we just have not addressed these issues for a number of years. And I'm sure there are reasons, but they just have to be addressed. And when we talk about the pool itself, I mean, it's a quality of life issue. And so, I mean, you have kids in this community, and you have Boys and Girls Club, you have adults, you know, active swimmers and things of that nature. I mean, what other opportunities and options do you have? I mean, Councilmember Klein is like, look, I grew up swimming in that pool. My swimming lessons were there. You know, that's one of the few quality of life assets. When we talk about Andy parades me when I keep talking about wanting to do more in parks. You know, that's a passion of mine. On those quality of life initiatives that, quite frankly, really build community. And this is just one of them, so I just want you all to know that you'll see more of this going forward.
I want to open the door to another subject matter. We have a reserve fund, and I think there's about $2 million in there. Is that the ballpark figure?
Well, yeah, but right now we're almost $500,000 in the red in the financials right now. As of today, so we've already used. You need like 1.5 in your reserve to cover 3 months of operating, and that's about where we're at if we continue on this trend.
You know, in the grand scheme of things, I think the amount needed for the pool isn't a great amount in order to be in compliance. But now, because it does. And I know, you know, our youth council is not really up and running at this point, but because the biggest majority using the pool is the youth, I know we have at least that amount in the youth council fund. I don't see, really see it. Andy's shaking his head, but I really don't see it an issue.
But I think when we looked at the numbers last year, it's a 50-50 mix between seniors and kids. I think our seniors and senior lap swim, I think we're pretty close to a 50-50 mix on who's using the pool.
Well, which the Boys and Girls Club do
schedule. Which is a good thing, though, Anna. That
it is.
Yeah.
But I mean, that fund kind of sits there.
Oh, that part.
I'm just looking because it's really, like I said, in the grand scheme of things, it's not an outrageous amount, and it would keep our kids going. I mean, yeah, the seniors can go to the Cove or wherever else, but our kids, you know, in the summertime, they spend all their time
here. I'm with you on that, and I wouldn't disagree with you on that.
And that's an option. They've got $124,000.
Now, what percentage, the question is, what percentage of that has to stay in that fund?
103.
Great.
Okay. And so
we're good.
So we're good. And so, you know, this is not something call it. As long as you give us a plan, that's what we want. And that's the key piece of all the items that we're going to discuss tonight. Our department heads, guys, let's start putting together a plan to address these issues over the long term. What you did, that Calvin Improvement Program, putting a plan in place, and that's the key component of showing progress. And so I'm very happy that we're having this frank conversation. So I do appreciate it.
The reason I brought up that reserve fund, the former mayor and his wife come by my house today and sometimes we visit, and he made the suggestion to me that maybe we should use some of that reserve fund for infrastructure repair. And probably his suggestion is probably a lot more than what I would want, but nevertheless, I'm sure he doesn't mind me saying it, so he felt some of that should be used for that. I just want to bring that up. Councilman,
thank you, Mayor. Hey, at some point, did I hear you say that at some point before the end of next year's swimming season, we're going to have to spend $45,000, whatever, do all of this? You know, for another $15,000, can we just get a brand new swimming pool built? Has anybody looked at that? You know, what it would cost to build this pool inside, make it a little smaller than the one that's already there? And, you know, I mean, has somebody thought about retro? Instead of just keep pouring this bad, you know, good money after bad.
We haven't gone there yet.
All right.
But it's not a problem for me to ask. just to get a ballpark figure on what we think we just replacing.
The hole's already there. It's one of the few places in town you can pull a truck up.
We can ask that question.
I don't want to totally screw things up, but.
And I brought up the one that I think it's good that the seniors are in it, because that's a market that wants the pool. It's not just kids. We have adults who want that pool.
Yeah.
And they're the decision makers in their households. So if we've got this many, about half of our customers are adults, to me that's really strong footing for going to the community and saying, look, to our whole community, you're all using the pool, so you're all going to have to, this isn't just for kids. This is for you too. Mm-hmm.
That's true, and the fact that Leap and Ms. Giacomino were able to get $25,000 check to help run it this year. Who knows what maybe next year would bring? Or a little further down, maybe we could qualify for some other grants.
The problem with this whole design with people, and this is interesting. Because we were told today by Carl Huber that once we break the concrete at the pool, then we're all in. Once we start repairs, there's no going back. That you can't just say, well, I'm just going to repair it this year or not. It's too late. Once we start and once we make one improvement on the concrete level of the pool, we are now on the hook with ADEQ to enhance the benefit. We're grandfathered in on a lot of things, but there's some, we have to meet some of these requirements. But once we break concrete, once we break that deck, once we plug something, we set the path to the armor or to finish the pool, or ADQ, who doesn't want to come down and look, they don't want to close the pool, people doesn't want to close the pool, but once you start repairs, you're not grandfathered. Now you have to meet the current code, so. It's coming. It's been coming for since 69. So we really haven't done much to the pool except paint it once in a while. But it's just catching up.
And it was a grant also.
It was, wasn't it? That's right.
A lot of the things we talked to tonight sound rather dire, and they probably are, but there are some positive things, and maybe Mr. Climac can mention the lowered electric costs at the solar.
And basically, just to try to make it really simple here, what's happening is for the months of January and February, what we've experienced is about a 50% reduction in the cost of the power bill, which all sounds great. Okay, that's a good thing. Each month, January and February are not peak months in the solar cycle. As we get more into the year, starting in April and then June 21st, the longest day of the year, we would expect, as long as it's not raining or early monsoon or something like that. So each month it gets a little bit better until we get probably into September and the days start getting shorter. So you finally get to the winter solstice of December 21st. Okay? So then it's the shortest day, and it's probably the day you're going to produce the least amount of solar power. All right, all that being said, when you take another thing that's really important to remember here is that we're still on the grid. Okay, we haven't left the grid. And when you look at a typical bill, there's got to be 15 different associated taxes, transfer fees, transportation fees, you name it, it's on that invoice. So, we're still on the hook for a lot of those costs just due to us being on the grid. Okay. So if you were to take, say on the average, say $5,000 a month that you would actually save in billing, you're looking at about $60,000 a year. Okay. And then with our what's called APS performance-based incentives, okay, we're looking at getting about another $44,000 back each year as an infusion of new money based on what we generate at 6.5 cents per kilowatt hour. Okay. So if you were to just grab those two numbers, 60,000 or 38 on the low end, which it could be as high as 44,000, depending, because when you look at P it's called the PV Watts, which is photovoltaic watts calculator program. It spells all that out. Okay. So if you're looking at 98,000, and then you look at roughly what it is that we're having to pay back on a loan, which is, okay. All right, these are my numbers. These are my numbers, and I've always indicated that the solar is only one tool in the box. It's not the total answer, you know, but it's a move in the right direction. So let's just take that 98,000 and say that's become a good number, and let's say that our annual payment is say 76,000. We're gaining about $22,000 a year. Okay, that doesn't sound like a lot of money. My early numbers generated about $20,000 a year as being a benefit, okay? And I actually was interviewed by Sunshine Magazine about 6 months ago. And I told them, it's not a panacea. We're probably going to make around $20,000. Now, our consultant is thinking that we're going to make probably about $33,000 after all of his working with the APS people and gyrating the numbers, working with WIPA. And that's fine. The consultant can do those numbers. WIPA thinks we're going to make around $33,000. I've always been around $20,000. And it seems like my numbers seem closer to right. Okay. And then, now there's another thing that's happening here, is that once you get on the solar, a good portion of those dollar savings, okay, are no longer subjected to increases. Rate increases, that we've been averaging about 2.1% a year. Now, you do have a loan that's at 2.99%, okay, which kind of counterbalances that, right? But then again, we don't control the costs of the rate increases. It could possibly be more. So I'm banking on $22,000 a year, and over 20 years, you're looking at over $400,000 in savings. Again, it's not a panacea. It never was intended to be. It's part of the energy audit where we look at where can we save. And the other thing that Justin brought this up to me, and I don't think about it a whole lot, but he said we're a green community. And because, we're environmentally sensitive, trying to do better, maybe help the world from the standpoint of carbon emissions reductions, as he reminded me of that, and I said, nobody ever talks about that. So I guess it's kind of a contribution of our part, our small part, in a big world that, at the end, maybe it doesn't make a lot of difference, but I think we're moving in the right direction. And that's really where it's at. And, the other cost savings of the plan is intended to improve our energy use on our just in our processing, how we're processing our wastewater, how we're operating the plant. One of the things that comes up, we talk about safety. You're never going to have enough safety. And a lot of the ideas that we kicked around about safety were my very same concerns when I first went to that plant. It takes a long time to make those changes. But the bottom line is you're never going to have enough safety, and our staff have always been told, you guys are educated, you know your business, you're certified. If you ever feel you're put in a position where your well-being is being threatened, don't do it. Nobody's ever saying you have to do anything. Okay? We can get people, we can get the equipment, we can do whatever we need. And my staff has been told that a multitude of times. And we're soon going to be embarking on about $152,000 program to add more platforms, more stairs, more ladders, more railing. It's the kind of stuff that I myself would want to add, but I don't have the luxury or the money to do it. Okay, and it would have been done a long time ago if all the time that I've been here, if I was ever told, here's some money, go do it. Okay, but it's just not that low-hanging fruit. It's just not there. So in some instances, we can argue, are the walls high enough, are they low enough, is it safe enough? I would always like to make it safe. I mean, that's always the goal. And again, I would put railings where a consultant would tell me you don't need them. ADQ would say you don't need them. Even OSHA would say you don't need them. But that doesn't mean that a guy driving by a basin that's 28 feet deep, driving on a backhoe, can't slip off of that backhoe and fall into that basin. That's how I think about things, because I look at it from a construction standpoint. I know how accidents can happen if you're not constantly being aware of your environment, where you're at, what you're doing. You can slip into one of those basins and you're dead. And I can tell you this, none of my guys knew anything about the buoyancy aspects at a plant. And when I was working in the Clarkdale plant, I experienced this personally. This is back in 1995. The importance of always having two people at a location working together, never one person alone. Especially when we have our diffusers on, where we have our bubblers working. There's no buoyancy in that water. And this, I did explain this to our staff early on, so that they became well aware of the dangers, because they said, well, you know, we throw somebody a lifeline, it won't work. And there's a lot of things. So there's a lot of things relative to safety that can always be done better. Mm-hmm. Always. Thanks, Tom. So
just, let me just follow up on that for public consumption primarily. I was with the vice president of APS last week, and I was kind of wondering their different energy sources, and 30% of it is nuclear. So we're doing solar, and more solar comes into existence in government and private and home, residential, et cetera, less reliance upon nuclear and or coal energy sources. So that is the benefit for not only us here saving money, but for the planet in and of itself, with less reliance on, in my opinion, polluting and or seriously dangerous nuclear power, which always runs the risk of a serious accident, i.e. 3 Mile Island. Mm-hmm. Mr. Johnson.
If any of the council members had any...
You said that you're embarking on $152,000 safety repairs. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you're wanting to put in the budget for next year?
Yes. I've actually already got it in there.
Okay.
Because it was part of last year's work to be performed.
Okay.
But we never got to do it. Okay. And just so everyone knows, USDA Rural Development, as good as those folks are, you know, we were held up. I mean, our plan went in November 2013 to do all this work, and it still isn't done. But I will say this, it was reviewed finally in January of this year. So moving through that federal system sometimes takes a long time, and you got to wait your turn. You know, you're not at the top of the list. I mean, we're no different than anybody else. And I've been told, Tom, right now, we're working on your plan, but tomorrow we may be told there's another pile that goes on top of your pile, and you may be shut down. And we won't look at your plan for another year.
And the money is from the enterprise?
Yes, it's enterprise. It's not general fund. Most of the stuff you hear us talking about this evening is what is going to impact the general fund. You'll get everything else, a little bit later. But there was one other thing that I was aware of that we wanted to bring, and that was the library. Mm-hmm. And they need an HVAC system. And we also know from the prior years that we talked about what they, the building's 100 years old. It needs some work. So that HVAC, Peggy, is nice here if you have any questions over.
Hey, what was it?
Was 17 or?
We had a $17,000 infusion. How much of the building maintenance fund was that the question? In addition,
we had a conversation with Peg a couple of months ago discussing, all right, with that 17 grand, what was council's goal as it relates to that money? I mean, is it strictly dedicated for the HVAC system, HVAC system? Can it be used to address the trusses? What is it called? On the outside exterior of the building that one of them fell.
The cornices.
On the exterior of the building. And so, and that was a question that came up. Is that 17 grand dedicated to that? Or do we have safety issues on the outside of the building that need to be addressed as well? So I wasn't sure if whether or not staff had the flexibility to make that decision. Was it strictly dedicated to that?
and there was a question of the type of system in that building, the amount of humidity being created by this by the particular system that we have budgeted for, but there's an impact on, as Peg has brought to my attention, there's an impact on the books, the floor, with the amount of humidity inside that building, and so the computers, and so that's the other piece of all of this. Do we really want to, if we say, look, the library is a very important asset, and so we certainly don't want any further degradation of that building, do we want to increase the amount of funds dedicated to an HVAC system to get a,
it's the opposite, not the house, yeah.
HVAC, AC
system.
Versus
evaporative refrigeration.
Exactly. So, yeah, and that's another discussion. But the one piece that Peg could say, but you know, summer months, you know, the books well, the floor has been fixed, it buckles, and that's been addressed. I think it last year, right? Once. Yeah, it was addressed last year, and so, but that too is another decision that certainly. We'll leave with council. We really want to improve that system itself, and so
it's one of the treasures of the community.
And I would just like to interject here, not like I'm correct to my boss, but I may not have shared this with you, is that when we went to council last year, this was for maintenance for the building, and we were talking about painting and cleaning and doing all that, and the council came back, if I remember correctly, and they said, let's put $17,000 into repairing the building. Then what happened was she was having AC swamp close. So we just redirected that $17,000 into her most immediate need, and that was to fix that. So their original intent was to start working on the outside, but you can't. There's all these rules and regulations and power washing.
It's an anchor building in the historic district, right. And so we have to be mindful. Moreover, we want to be mindful of what those regulations are, because that is an anchor building. It's a cornerstone of the historic district, and I think we want to be really careful about the way we handle that building and how we allocate the funding for it as well. So that was the question that came up, because when we had heating and swamp cooler issues, we had the $17,000 sitting there. But if you have a building that might need paint or might need some cornice work or might need some tuck pointing or something, but on the other hand, you've got the interior of the building that's also being affected by lack of heating or lack of cooling, as the case may be, what's most important? Should we allocate all $17,000 for just one project? Should we split it between inside and outside of the building? And if we do work outside the building, then what does the State Historic Preservation Office require of us? And what do we want to see over time for that anchor to look like as you're walking or driving right into Main Street? So that's kind of one of the questions that we had as we were looking at all of this. And the other question was that we had some feedback from the state contractor that said we could install a new evaporative cooling system, but when we started looking at the costs of evaporative cooling as opposed to air conditioning or refrigeration system, we actually discovered that for only a few more thousand dollars, we could install AC instead of a swamp cooler. And so that seemed to be a much more cost-effective use of the funding. It would have been $17,000 that we had on that line item, plus we had $3,000 in the library's general maintenance fund that already was sitting in. And I think altogether the cost would have been something like $22,000 or $23,000 to do the AC, which would have been new furnaces and a new cooling system, as opposed to something like $39,000 or $40,000 that had been quoted just for the swamp cooler. All of us, it seems like it was much more cost-effective to do the AC.
And what does that swamp cooler do to your books?
Well, that's what Mr. Johnson was discussing. They expand because the humidity in the air is absorbed by the paper of the pages. And if at one point you could have put 30 books on a shelf, maybe
during the height of the summer season, with all that humidity being popped into the air, you can put 15 or 20 on the shelf, and all the rest of it looks just swollen and, you know, kind of piled all over because there's no place to put them. And if you're thinking about the paper, then you're also thinking about the hardwood maple floors, and you're also thinking about the computer system, and, you know, all the public access computer systems that we have. So there are needs inside the building and needs outside the building as well. So I guess the question, at least from my point of view, is, you know, does council have a preference in terms of how that funding should be allocated? Would you leave it up to us to make the best determination of the use?
Let me ask this because I don't know. I'll be with you. Is the post office down below, the federal post office down below, do they have their own confined heating and cooling system?
Yes, they do.
They do?
Yes.
Okay.
There's one of them, yes, they have gas.
Okay. I think they pay us, correct me if I'm mistaken, about $1,700 a month rent.
Yeah.
10 months of 17,000.
Yeah.
I'm good.
It'd be nice if we could take some of that
back
and put it into
the
subject.
That's what I was thinking. Council Member Collins.
Thanks, Mayor. Those are all original double hung windows in the building, right?
Yes, they are.
Beautiful. Insulation, yeah, I know. They're beautiful. I tried to paint them one time, but you didn't hire me. I told you how much it cost, but
well,
anyway.
That's the
principal library, Gene. No, my point is, you know, you spend all this, you know, you spend $23,000 on an AC unit. What kind of, you know, is it just going to go right out the windows? And, you know, how tight is the building? And, you know, we don't want to replace windows. We want to keep it historic and the cornerstone and all of that. But again, you know, pouring, you know, good money after bad. If we don't seal that building up, you know, we're just, that AC unit's going to be on all day and all night. Same with the heat. So.
Well, it's actually pretty heat and cooling effective in there.
Okay.
Surprisingly, because they did do some renovation and repair on those windows.
We just put some candles, you know. You could do a real low-tech. Man, it just lights some candles, put them in front of the windows, and just watch the flames flicker, you know, and watch, you know, make sure that there's some fire extinguishers around.
Yeah. It was insulated last year.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's just a consideration, you know. And Andy's talking about wanting to repaint all the windows, so you don't want to paint them and then replace them.
Let's go over to Councilman Klein.
Well, I think certainly, Peg, you guys know what you need, your urgent needs are up there. And it does, you know, it is nice to have the building looking really good, but my preference would be the interior of the HVAC system. I mean, something that, because there's quite an investment inside that we need to protect.
The value is
huge. So that would be my preference.
I don't know what the rent or lease agreement is with the federal government.
I have to make sure. It's like $45,000 a year. And that's going directly right now into the general fund, so it's...
Well, I was thinking, I don't know how long it's for. 5 years, 2 years, whenever it was last implemented. Maybe we could have a slight 5 years. Okay, well, do you have a suggestion? Jack up the rent.
Like they do to us, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They keep raising the box straight up
there. You know, unless, you know, other council members had any other specific projects, needs, lights on Main Street type of items, ballpark type of items. I'd love to just kind of run through very, very quickly, you know, some of the items that we discussed during our staff meeting this morning. If that's okay.
What did you say just now? What?
Ballpark.
I thought you said adult park.
part. And I was about ready to say, well, it's time for me to go home.
The dogs can use it to walk the dogs.
City Manager, Mr. Johnson. Look, a couple of items on the fire department, it seems he did put it in his budget document, but he expressed, and I guess he's expressed this in the past, the possibility of the acquisition of another heart monitor to go inside the raised, one of those rigs, another copy machine, and the possibility of repairing the floor at station 82. In police department, one of the areas of concerns that they have is the impound lot, trade secrets, but unfortunately, we've had a number of incidences where people have cut the gate into to access the impound lot, walk around the corner and want to cut the gate, but people have been going inside that lot and taking parts out of the vehicles. So that's one of the things that Chief really wants to take a look at, just securing that entire perimeter, and also installing a separate access area for the Bisbee bus, because right now we don't give out our F1 keys, and that's how we lock the F1 key, which, you know, obviously the officials are using. We're not giving that out, you know, to anybody, but the bus CCSA needs somewhere, whoever the contractor is, needs somewhere to store their particular buses. So really shoring that area up is really, really paramount. And also the possibility of installing maybe a few more lights on that particular, in that particular area. And public works, we already hit the HVAC system, quality of life items. I know Councilmember Hansen had expressed interest in us in the possibility of acquiring a screen so that we could do our own movies in the park like we did last year. I know last year we had a great opportunity. We only had one showing, but it really proved to be great success, and people still continue to ask, hey, when is the next one? So if we have the opportunity to acquire our own, Ashley did some preliminary research that we're looking between $3,500 depending on the size of screen that we were using. We have the beauty of having PEGS access to some of the licenses for movies. We can get all of our licenses from the library. And, you know, the thought was, hey, you know, we're just kind of chopping up today, and we're talking, hey, 4th of July, you know, could we have great summer movies? You got fire department popping up fireworks at night. And also, and maybe if Boys and Girls Club, they're having a trick-or-treat session and whatever the case may be, because we have some great, you know, Halloween movies going, and it's really, really, again, building community. That kind of really interesting stuff that many of you all here have grown to enjoy. And as I mentioned, Dog Park. And lastly, some of you had expressed the possibility of upgrading the AV system here in council chambers. I'm not sure if that's a possibility, but I know, Mary, you'd like to see us get to the point where we're recording our meetings and be able to see every face.
I've discussed that with Mr. Trackman, and he has a dollar amount that he kind of told me. He said to reinstitute it would be about $1,000, which I thought was very reasonable. I do want to go back to that system, because people come up and say they really can't even tell who's sitting up there, really. And the old system, I guess all the equipment is somewhere. He told me it's somewhere. We still have it. That's what he told me. And I wanted to get this done by April the 1st, but we've been busy with stuff, so I'm kind of shooting now by June 1st. I think the public has a right to be able to see people close up from the podium. They should be able to see the city manager and the city attorney, obviously the council, and sometimes in the past, baseball teams that win championships or whoever, little Miss Pageants come in. I think that's important. It's a community type of thing, and they can zoom in, and their family and friends are seeing them close up on television. And I think this is what we need to move in there. I was going to have a work session on it, but most of the council is kind of nodding their head in approval of that. So I'm going to move on that pretty soon. So.
What is this going? It's a video. The video system? Is that what
it's an old camera system that can zoom in on people, and it was used by law that the council passed circa about 97 and during the Tom Wheeler administration, by law, by ordinance, all council sessions have to be on television live. Mm-hmm. And so we have that little stationary thing up there, but it's not really fulfilling the in my opinion, not fulfilling the need of serving the public. So the old camera system was like a big camera. It was on wheels, and the old lady used to operate it. And you could wheel it around here and there, scan the audience, and the old system worked wonderful.
So somebody would have to operate it.
Yeah, okay. And we did pay Bill Glave a little bit of money, not very much, so maybe we get a volunteer to do that or somebody that wants to learn how to do it, but maybe have a little experience.
Yeah, and Ryan Bruce has expressed interest in wanting to be a part of that conversation with the students.
I appreciate you talking about
that. And, you know, as far as the AV system, one of the things that I was thinking is, you know, whatever camera system, television, whatever, because it's to allow when people are giving presentations, and as an example, we're giving, showing maps. You all get a chance to see it, but the public doesn't see it. And so being able to show, I can put those on screens, the projector screens, and being able to show that type of information could possibly, in my mind, benefit the folks that are here taking time to come.
Councilmember Klein.
When we switched over to the new system was about the time Bill was getting ready to retire. He was tired, and he was retiring, and that's when the budget crunch really hit, and it was just kind of an economical choice, but then, you know, the public really complains about it. I like it better, but, you know, but the public doesn't.
I don't like the idea of Zoom.
Right, yeah. Right.
Well, let me say that there is a... There, at least in the past, there was a TV set up over there, and so you can look at the TV to see whether you're on there or not.
I think the TV's somewhere, too.
Yeah, so you can look over and see whether you're on the camera. On the camera.
And the last thing that I'll throw out, just...
I appreciate you bringing that.
Being solution-oriented is, and I've directed the staff that on Tuesday, we'll take a look at every department, look at our fee structures, and so... do a quick analysis on all the services that we provide. And, you know, Nina brought up and said, hey, look, you know, when we process alcohol permits in a few communities, if any, it's free. Whereas many communities, I mean, there's a charge, there's a cost associated with going through that process. You know, former mayor, you know, says to me, hey, look, you know, the value that the city provides with barriers, you know, we do a great service, you know, but does it make sense for you all for the police department to, you know, charge a fee for those escorts? Because you're talking about a fuel cost. There's a time cost associated with it, even if it's very, very minimal. Mm-hmm. Very minimal. And so, and I the same person who spoke to
I was going
to
mention that because he mentioned it. Talk to you later.
Yeah, so I just throw it out. You know, and so, but that fee structure analysis and looking at all the departments and identifying what are opportunities for us to realize and capture some of the costs.
Yeah.
That we give away. The same thing the fire department. Hey, is there a cost recovery program that we really need to look at? Because we know that our fire department provides a great service, but when they have to travel out to, you know, San Jose or Naco and provide certain services, do we want to try to recoup those costs associated? It costs them this time, effort, there's overtime costs when they have to respond to those costs. You know what? We need to take a look at that, not just take a look at it, but actually move on it. So that has to be developed. And so those are, you know, just some items that came up in our staff meeting today, and I wanted to throw those out to you all collectively.
Thank you. Councilmember Klein.
Comment real quick on the police department. You know, we keep, everything is community policing. And for as long as I can remember, the police department has always provided an escort. And I don't know, maybe, you know, it doesn't hurt to look at it. But I don't know, it just doesn't seem right to charge a grieving family for an escort. I'm sorry, that's just my take on...
I hear you.
And it's something that I can tell you that the families appreciate very much. And there's still, in this community, there's still a great respect for, I mean, the cars, you go to Tucson Phoenix, they don't care at all, and they just keep continuing. Here, the cars actually pull over. It's nice. It's nice to keep. I understand times are changing, things are changing, but it's kind of nice to keep some of those hometown long-standing traditions. I mean, I think we need to take some of that into consideration as well. Just my thought.
Yeah, that's all I have from staff, and because everything has pretty much been addressed, and we'll continue to talk about it as we go through the budget process.
Well, Mr. Johnson and the rest of the staff, speaking on behalf of the council, thank you very much for setting this up and being able to express ourselves. Did you have a comment?
Yes, I just wanted to let everybody know there's a vintage baseball games on Saturday and Sunday, and I'd like to invite everybody to them. If you've never seen them, they're funnier, and I'll get out. So come out for the vintage baseball games. They play in the 1880 Brewers.
When there weren't schools.
Once again, thank you to Mr. Johnson and staff for being here and listening to the council who we represent, the public. And so essentially, you're listening to the public and our concerns and things to be interested in. Once again, thank you. Without objection, I'm going to ask for a motion to adjourn.
So
moved. A motion and a second to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed nay. Ayes have it. This meeting is adjourned.